Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Transit Authority, the official podcast of the American Public Transportation Association. I'm Dawn Dissler, CEO of Metro Regional Transit Authority in Akron, Ohio, and we have a great program for you today. Our guests are Nadine Lee, President and CEO of Dallas Area Rapid Transit, Aaron Rogers, CEO and General Manager of Omnitrans, MJ Maynard, Vice Chair at the Board of Directors and Chief Executive Officer of RTC Southern Nevada, and then Charlotte Shaw, last but not least, Executive Director and CEO of Birmingham Jefferson County Transit Authority, or the MAX. So welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Happy Women's History Month, right? It's Women's History Month, and I am truly honored to be here. There's no doubt. I get to, you know, I always say whenever I get to do this, I not only get to sit in a room, or I guess on a screen, with some great, great women and leaders in our organizations, in our industry, but I also get to call these women my friend. And to me, that is like the coolest thing that can ever happen. So my first question to each of you is pretty simple, right? How did you get here? I know every one of you has had a really interesting path, an interesting journey to the C-suite. And I'd like you to kind of reflect on, you know, more of a private moment and those collective achievements that you have. A moment in time when you said, I can be the CEO of this transit agency, right? So, Aaron, I think I'm going to start with you and let you go ahead and answer that question.
All right. Thank you, Dawn. And it's so great to see everyone. And thank you for having me. I'll say I started my career in transit, like many of us. I didn't know that transit was going to be my path. I started in Boston, Massachusetts on a private contract with the MBTA on the paratransit side, and spent the majority of my time in transit at the Orange County Transportation Authority, which was a wonderful training ground for me, exposed to many different roles and positions there. And I did not really aspire to be a CEO at that time. I so much enjoyed my role in a deputy type role where I was kind of on the front line with the people. And it wasn't until I was presented with an opportunity that would lead to being the CEO of this organization that I really made the decision that it was something I felt very prepared to do. And it was something that I felt I could do to make a greater impact than what I had been doing. And for me, our roles, our industry is about people. It's about the people who work within our organizations. It's about the people who use our services. It's about the communities that we connect by our services and all of the other benefits that transit brings, even to people who are not using transit. So knowing that I had the opportunity to make that type of an impact, I was well positioned to become the CEO here, which in a role that I've been in since 2019. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. So that's hard work and preparation, I would say, is what made me feel prepared to take this role and really kind of doing your homework.
Great. How about you, MJ?
Well, hello. First of all, it's so amazing to be with all of you. Dawn, you're right. Not only am I a huge fan of just the professional experts that you are, but you are my friends. And so this is a really privilege to be with all of you today. So, you know, I usually ask, you know, those of us in this industry, how many of you know, raise your hand, how many thought you'd be, you know, working around public buses, that sort of thing. And I don't think anyone really raises their hand, which is funny. It's so interesting how we all, you know, found our way to public transit. And I like to also say, you know, I was not conceived on a bus. I wasn't a bus driver. I will tell you, though, that I grew up as a pretty scrappy background and on my own at a pretty young age, and came from a family that didn't have access to a car, couldn't afford a car mostly. And so I grew up taking public transit. Little did I know that I would be back here, as I always feel like I've sort of come full circle. But with that being said, because I started working at a young age, my first job was a dishwasher in a restaurant, I found myself, I thought, this, well, I guess this is my career. by the time I finished high school, I was again, because I had the sort of the scrappy, I had to make things happen for myself. I became one of the managers of this restaurant. I thought, I guess I'm good at hospitality. This is what I'm going to do. And I was in Seattle, Washington, and I came to Las Vegas. And of course, when you tell people out of the Nevada, you're going to college in Las Vegas, that, you know, the looks like there's actually a college in Las Vegas, but they had a really good hospitality program. So I came here to Las Vegas. I got my hospitality degree and kind of worked my way up. But I will tell you though, as a young woman coming up, I was working in the hotel gaming industry here. And generally speaking, I was the only woman at the table. And I think that kind of prepared me for coming to public transit, because when I joined the RTC about 17 years ago, it was again, a very male dominated industry, which I think as women, I think in the back of our head, our minds, sometimes it's that imposter syndrome, or we don't think that we can do the job at hand. And I think because of that, we're more resilient, because we've sort of had that, I don't think I can do it, or the men in the room don't think I can do it. I think that's sort of been my secret sauce in terms of, you know, MJ, you can do this. You know, don't let anybody externally or your internal dialogue tell you that you can't do it. So Aaron is right. This is about people and serving people. And I certainly have a great empathy for folks that have less options to move in a community, because you really, you know, if you want to call yourself a community that wants equity, you can't have that without access. And so I'm really proud of the work that we do. So anyway, I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Charlotte, you want to go next?
Yeah. So it is really nice to see you ladies again and be on this platform with you once again. I have really enjoyed the last one. And Don, you are my friend, that's for sure. So, you know, when I think about my career, it often, you know, and lately during this Women's Month, I've had several interviews, and I've had to go back to some very painful places for myself. I'm at the end of the baby boomer era. And so when I came through years ago in the early 80s, there was no example for me to even think about holding a position in leadership role, especially at the C-suite level. That was not an option during my period, or doing the beginning of my career. So when I saw the C-suite, all I saw was men and predominantly white males. And there were no opportunities for Black women like myself to think outside the box. And I never thought that I would be a CEO. I kind of just fell into the role over the years. But truly, I'm an example where my preparation met my opportunity. And as I mentioned in a previous event, I had to hide in very intellectual places so that I could be a sponge to learn what was going on in the company, what was going on around me. And I started in the Department of Defense, and it was high tech at the time. And that was really the technology of that era was aerospace. So I really started in a good technical place. I started with a high-end company that stayed on the edge of what was going on. I mean, we were doing internet back then, you know, where we were before it hit the marketplace. We were testing it. We were texting. We were doing things that were beyond the imagination. So I had an opportunity very early in my career to experience skills that were developed later. And I was on the forefront of those skills. And that really made the difference in my positioning. When I had an opportunity in one of the board meetings, there was a vice president who noticed me at the table. He noticed me at the table in the boardroom because I was answering questions. And the rest of my teammates couldn't answer those questions because they were not prepared. So I had to make sure prior to each meeting I was prepared. But to get prepared, I had to run and make copies with the guys I was hanging out with who was teaching me or showing me the things that I needed to know for those meetings, because they were kind of casted out too. They were considered the nerds of the organization But I recognized very early in my career, I was like, wait a minute, these nerds know the answers and they can teach me when other guys really, they didn't even want to teach me. They didn't want to show me anything. They didn't want to train me. And so I went to the nerds and I was like, okay, so how did you get to this number? How do you do this? And those guys taught me a lot, but they also sent me to go make the copies of the things that I would need to go home and learn at night. So I would learn those things. And then I get in the meeting and I answer the questions. And then one day this little small voice from the back came up with the answer, and that was me. And the vice president said, you know, from that point forward, he said, I don't want anyone coming into this meeting unless they go through Charlotte first and the package gets signed off on. And that was the turning point. Then I recognized I had something that I could really offer, because really, ladies, I didn't think I had anything to offer because no one paid me any attention. I was the invisible person in the room. And then I thought at that time that I didn't have the necessary skills. I thought I wasn't smart enough. You know, I thought I didn't have the right things to say. I thought I didn't look the part. So I had a lot of vulnerabilities. And I recognized later all those insecurities, all those vulnerabilities, you know, all those things I need to be validated for. It's been paid in full now. The past owes me nothing. And at times, Dawn, when it's really difficult sometimes for me to think about that and where I was and some of the things happened to me during that career, I really just kind of put it behind me. But lately, I haven't been able to do that. So for some reason, I now know that I have a story that I probably should share and tell with other women, because I'm really an example of what hard work can do for a female. It can land you in the C-suite. Now, it may take a long time. Now, you guys, I said I started in the 80s. So you know, do the math. Do the math, Nadine. I'm probably one of the oldest ones on this call, and I'm okay with that. But I just want to let you know, during that era, what if you think about what it was like 20 years from that point or 10 years from that point, can you imagine in the early 80s? It was very difficult. But at the same time, like I said, I'm not bitter about it because it actually made me better.
Well, excellent. Thank you. You always inspire us, Charlotte. There's no doubt about that. But going on to another inspiring person, Nadine, bring us home on this question.
All right. Thanks, Dawn. And it is so great to be here. And I'm so honored to be around these amazing women. So it's so hard. Whenever I get asked, when did you decide to become a CEO? It's sort of like yesterday, you know, because sometimes I feel like I still don't know if I'm ready to be the CEO, right? But the truth is that I started as a civil engineer in my career, and I was actually doing highway design back when I started in the private sector. And over time, I just realized, you know, I don't really like doing this highway design thing because I didn't think it was a really worthwhile investment for the future. I just didn't think it was the way we want to travel in the future. So I had this opportunity to move to Colorado and work in transit projects. And suddenly my world opened up, like so many of us, right? We get into transit and then we just all think, oh my gosh, you know, we come at it from all different walks of life, but we all know the unifying thing is public transportation. So I did that in Colorado for 18 years, during which time I actually moved to the public sector because I really wanted to start working on projects where I was the decision maker. I wasn't just doing it for a profit motive, but I was actually trying to accomplish something, a broader goal for the community. And that was super important to me. And so, you know, I think a lot of people think there's a, you know, path that you have to take in order to become a CEO. But the truth is that a lot of us, there's no like point A to point B straight line. A lot of us just kind of wind our way through things. And those of us who are lucky enough to just follow things that are interesting to us, sometimes we end up in the C-suite. In my case, you know, I got an opportunity from Colorado to move to Los Angeles and work in innovation. So here I am, an engineer of all things, working in an innovation office, which I know the stereotype, I don't need to perpetuate it. But but the truth is that, you know, going to the innovation office opened my mind to, you know, how do we bring new ideas to the industry and continue to shape and change the future that we deliver for people. And from that point on, my longtime mentor and sponsor, Phil Washington, who was the CEO at LA Metro at the time, he pulled me up and put me in the position of being the chief of staff. And this was a pivotal moment for going into executive leadership, because what he said to me was, and I'm gonna use my words, not his words. He said it much more eloquently, but basically he said, Nadine, I've made a lot of investments in you, and I think you should do something with those investments. So at that point, I was like, okay, I get it, Phil. So I took the role of chief of staff. And then when Phil was getting ready to leave LA Metro, he had a conversation with me that basically said, hey, you need to start looking. And now's the time for you to make the jump to the CEO position. If you're ever going to do it, now's the time. And so, you know, I was lucky enough to find alignment of the things I wanted to accomplish with the things that the DART board wanted to accomplish in their new CEO hire. And the planets aligned, and here I am. So there was no path. There was no plan. I just happened to land where I am right now. And it's been an exciting journey for me. And I now tell people, you know, don't plan it out, you know, because then you don't take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves to you serendipitously, which is, I think, a critical thing for having a long and successful career, is to make sure that you're not disappointing yourself over things that may or may not happen.
And Dawn, can I add, because sure. I don't think I drew a straight line from, you know, being in the hospitality industry to the RTC, public transit. Well, you know, we do a lot more than public transit here at our agency, but I think we have a tendency to put ourselves in a box, right? A professional box. But if you listen to Aaron and Charlotte and Nadine, I know your story too, Dawn, it really is, you know, business skills are very transferable. And I think sometimes in public transit, we look for, okay, have you been in public transit for 20 years? That's going to make you a great executive. That's not necessarily the case. You know, you have to have an understanding not only about, you know, finances and marketing, brand integrity, and you know, long term vision, but it really is about understanding the art and science of managing people, and the art and science of understanding how important, you know, your role is in the community. So I do think our industry is so dynamic that to sell it and to talk about it and to open up to other, especially women, it really isn't, you don't necessarily, again, have to have come up in a public transit role. I think we all of us here show that we started in a way that along the way we picked up some skills that allowed us to take on that role as CEO.
Yeah, and along Great. Those lines, you know, it's not just, you know, leadership skills being transferable, which is totally true and an on point for MJ. I think having a passion for what you're doing, knowing why, you know, what is your why for what you're trying to accomplish in life, right? You know, so many of us, I think, you know, we just followed our passion, and we were fortunate enough to be recognized for those things. And I think, you know, so many women in particular, I think they start their careers and they're worried, they're afraid of making a mistake. And all of us have made all kinds of mistakes along the way that we'll probably talk about later. But, you know, those mistakes are what help us grow and change and adapt and become the better leaders that we are today. And so I always tell people, like, don't worry about, you know, failure. Like, if you're going to fail fast and recover, because it's not something usually that's going to be fatal to your career.
Well, they also tell us that the only people that aren't doing something wrong or making mistakes are the people who aren't doing anything, right? So do something, get out there and do something. So talking about doing something, is there a person in your life that you thought, you know, I never thought I got the best advice from, but I just never thought it was going to come from them? Or the person that gave you that advice, you're just like, wow, I just didn't think that. Does anybody have somebody like that in their life, a moment like that? Charlotte's shaking her head yes. Come on, Charlotte.
Let me tell you, I got a couple people like that, because if you think about my career and how I landed in transit, you know, I just picked up the phone and started calling some folk when I found out I had the opportunity to go for an interview. And so I didn't know any of the, you know, I worked in transit, I worked at MARTA, but I was at a middle management role, believe it or not. I kind of made some huge jumps over the last couple of years. And I'm in Birmingham now. And what brought me to Birmingham was the mayor, who needed someone to run his BRT program. And because I was a good tactical person who worked in program management, I came and ran his program. But then I had the opportunity to come to BJCTA because then my predecessor was leaving. And the mayor was like, you know, Charlotte, I think you really should think about transit and go over there and run the organization. I was like, what? be a CEO. I don't know who the CEOs are. I'm not in a room with them. You know, a lot of these guys, they're together. They've been knowing each other for years. They've been in AFTA. I wasn't involved in AFTA. And so I didn't know anybody. So when I thought about it, I went, wait a minute, let me just start picking up the phone. And I talked to some people who knew some people. So I called out to DART. I called out to MARTA. I called out to Jacksonville. I called out to women. I called out I cold called these people, you all. They didn't know my name at all. Okay. So I'm like, hey, you know, I'm about to interview for this position in Birmingham. And, you know, it's for a CEO role. This is my background. And every last person agreed to help me but one. I think I called out to 10 CEOs and I got support from each one of those persons who prepared me and coached me not only for the interview, but who also coached me throughout my first year. And that to me, again, I had never experienced that before in my entire career, because usually everybody was so resistant. They were so far from willing to help, right? Because we don't always get the help we need, you know, in companies. Teamwork is not always teamwork, right? And when I called these individuals, only one, but the rest of them were very, and Phil Washington was one of them too, may I add. So all of them, male, females, black and white, were all willing to help little old Charlotte, who had never been a CEO before, ever, with advice. And not only did they didn't leave me with the advice during the interview, but they went out through my career. And I talked to each of them probably about, and some more than others, but at least one or two of them I talked to once a week, who's helped me throughout my career. And I like this, and that was Gary Thomas, Nat Ford, Janet Walker Ford, Rhonda Briggs, all the people who had reputations that I know now in AFTA, right? Because I didn't know that either, Don. I was like, well, wow, you're kind of popular here in AFTA, man. I didn't know that. Then I met Janet Walker Ford, and I didn't know she was married to Nat Ford. So I'm like, man, I get two for one.
The king and the queen.
Exactly. I met Dawn, and I was like, wait a minute, all these great people. So for me, the last 3 years, that's been my opening. That's been my gateway. Yeah, I didn't have that before then. I had to struggle with all my leadership roles and trying to get in place and get to positions. But the last 3 years, I can honestly say the AFTA people, you all, you know, just meeting colleagues and people through those conferences has really made a difference in my career.
Can I just point out also that it takes a tremendous amount of courage to make calls like that, to make cold calls like Charlotte did. And especially as women, we generally don't like to do that because we're afraid that somebody might reject us. And that's so, you know, kudos to you, Charlotte, for doing that because it took a lot of courage.
Thank you. I was afraid. Yes. I was afraid, Dady. I just did it afraid, right?
Okay. Good for you.
Thank you.
You doing it that way is better than the way I did it. I would stand outside AFTA doors and stalk people as they walked in and out. So you're talking about crazy, crazy looks. Yeah. Anybody else want to watch that?
That's how I got Phil Washington. He was speaking at one of the CEO conferences and I stayed outside the door until he got outside.
That's it. That's how you do it for sure. Anybody else, MJ?
No, I think sometimes it's not so, you know, apparent. It's not like somebody walks up to you with a name tag on and says, hi, I'm your mentor. Let me help you. I look back now, I think some of the invaluable advice that I got was almost being challenged by some really great men. Again, I was mostly in a male-dominated industry that saw something in me that I did not see in myself. And so pushed me. And at the time, as a young woman, I thought, gosh, they were so tough on me. Really tough on me. And I didn't see that same sort of approach with my colleagues. But I look back now and there's a gentleman here in town that I had to go back and say, thank you so much, because he saw something in me that I could not see. And he pushed me into a very uncomfortable place. And I was bound and determined, you know, I was like, you know, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get there. Because I don't think he thinks I can, but actually it was the opposite. He knew I could, I just didn't know that I could. And so again, sometimes I don't think it's this obvious, in-your-face advice. I think sometimes it's a really different approach, and I found that to be. I look back now, and I know that he was pulling me along in a way that really did help me. And so, it's not always just the "Hi, let me help you." It's sometimes that someone pushing you to, because you don't think you can do it, and they know you can.
Great, Aaron, you want to jump in?
Sure. I would just add, for me, my predecessor here, Scott Graham, I had worked with at OCTA, and he came over here. And when I left OCTA, I was working for MV Transportation, and I came here to the facility and ran into Scott, and he asked for a meeting, and we went to a meeting, and he said, you know, look, I'm going to be retiring. You know, this board has asked me for a succession plan. And, you know, I would really like you to come to work here as the deputy CEO and, you know, be the person that's ready when I leave. And I said, Oh, thank you. That's so nice. You know, of course, like we say, right. Thank you. Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. But no, thank you. You know, I've made this commitment, and, you know, these are the things I'm working on, and these are the reasons why, and this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, we parted, and kind of months and months went on, and, you know, we stayed in touch, of course, because he was a client of, you know, this agency was a client of MV's at the time. And so I was here regularly, and, you know, without getting into all the details, eventually I said, okay, I'll come. And immediately was like, what have I done? You know? And so, you know, similar to what was already said, I think he chose me because he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And honestly, the two of us couldn't be any different. You know, he's very militaristic, not, you know, I mean, he has a military background, great leadership qualities. I learned a lot from him, but in terms of our ways to interact with people and that, you know, the types of leaders we are, just very different styles. But it really worked for that reason. So, and I know we're going to get, you know, I'll probably talk a little bit more about that later, but I wasn't looking for a job. I wasn't, you know, looking around for a job to become a CEO. So I've always been very satisfied with the roles I was in. And then when you look back, you realize, you know, kind of to your point, Nadine, like sometimes things happen in a way that points you in that direction. And when it does, I think I've heard every single one of us talk about being prepared, right? Mm-hmm. Doing your homework. And I think that is embedded in kind of having that underdog mentality, like we're women, so we're starting at a disadvantage. So we have to be more prepared. And again, we made it very clear when we did the panel at the conference, right? That this isn't about, we don't like the men who are leaders. You know, the men are the ones who really have probably seen something in every single one of us. So it's not about that. There's just a different dynamic where I think men, it's kind of encoded there that, oh, I can do it, right? Mm-hmm. And for us, often, I think there's a bit of an underdog mentality. So he saw something in me that I may not have seen in myself at the time. And the opportunity presented itself, and I was prepared at the time. So
interesting. Every single one of us, it sounds like, have a story that talks about how it's not so much that we said, this is the path we want to go, or this is the job we want. It's somebody else saying, hey, go down this road now, or look into that job now, or I think you should come along with me to this side.
Right. It's time now, right? Yeah. It's time for you now. It's your time now.
Right. Somebody else telling us it's our time.
It's time to claim it. It's time to claim it, right? It's your time to claim it.
Exactly. So I know we'll be coming up on a break here soon. You know, we're talking about, this is all about Women's Month. And so I guess whether you feel this way or not, but how does being a woman in a CE role impact your organization or your community differently than having a man in a CEO's role? Do you think that that's different? Does anybody want to try and tackle that one? Nadine, you're shaking your head yes. So you want to jump in first?
Sure. I have to be careful not to do all these gestures where you pick on me first. But
I'm good at doing that.
No, I think it makes a huge difference in both the organization as well as the community. And let me give you a couple reasons why. First of all, in the organization, you know, a lot of times you think about people who look like you, right? So when I'm hiring, you know, I certainly include women in the candidate pool. And, you know, if you're a man, historically, you probably would be less likely to include women in the candidate pool, maybe not for conscious reasons, but perhaps unconscious bias factors in there. So I always tell people that when you have a woman in a leadership role, you've effectively doubled your candidate pool because you include women now in addition to men, because we all probably have historically included men in consideration for any job, but now we're including women too, right? Because of our lens and because we think and know that women are capable. We notice women. And so, you know, my organization now has a lot more women at the leadership level than it has ever had in the past. You know, we're seeing women take on lots of responsibilities that have historically been done by men just because those were the ones who were anointed as the people who took those jobs. So it's a very different environment here. And I think that having more women in leadership roles has created a lot more compassion for the situations that people are dealing with every single day of their lives, people who are dealing with senior care or child care, whether they are men or women. I think people are much more, I think our women leaders are much more inclined to say, you know what, you need this flexible time off to take care of your elderly parent. So go ahead and do that. Take the time that you need and then come back fully, you know, 100% ready to go. And it's not that men wouldn't have done that in the past, but I think there may have been a different, you know, different standard as far as the judgment of that time off. Mm-hmm. But women, because we are always balancing work and life in ways that is very public, I think we're much more inclined to make accommodations and give people grace if they need that time. Mm-hmm. From a community perspective, I think what's really important is, of course, as women and users of the transit system, I think we're much more inclined to think about what the special needs are for women who travel on our system. Women are more likely to be traveling with seniors or children, more likely to be carrying stuff and may need some place to put their stuff, like groceries or whatever it is that they just did their shopping for. So we think about those things. We think about women's security needs at night or anytime on the system. And we try to make accommodations for those things to make sure that women are feeling secure. And what we know is that by accommodating the special needs that women have when they travel on the system, that we actually make it better for everyone.
Yeah.
Excellent. So true. Excellent. MJ?
Yeah, I have so many thoughts here, but I couldn't agree with Nadine more. You know, I promised myself years ago, as I came up in the private sector, I was a vice president of one of the hotels here in Las Vegas, and I was the only woman in my role. And, you know, Monday morning we'd have our executive meetings, and my colleagues that were men talked about their weekend and the things that they were going to do. And at that time, I think I was also a single mom. And I guess I worked a lot and I missed a lot of time with my son because I felt like I needed to do just what the men were doing. They didn't leave work to go to their kids, generally speaking, to go to their kids' sporting events because many times they had wives at home to do that. And you can't get back that time with your kids. And I should have said, hey, as a mom, listen, I'll get the work done, but I really need to spend some time with my son. And I did not do that many times. And so I told myself that if I was ever in a position to sort of effectuate change, that I would. And so Nadine, I agree, you know, here at the agency, I make it very, very clear. We have a big job. We have a lot to do, but do not miss time with your children because you cannot get it back. I certainly expect you're going to have to do it. Maybe they might have to put in some time at night. You might just put in some time on the weekend, but I don't want to just, the work-life balance should not just be a catchphrase or a selling point. Right. You have to live it and mean it. And I have sometimes before I'll say, you take some time off. Go spend some time. You put it, there's a big project. Spend some time with your kids. Spend some time with your partner. So because I felt as a young professional woman that I had to do it exactly like my male counterparts, that, mm-hmm. that we weren't in the same situation and we weren't yeah. coming from the same place. And so I think that's been something that has been such a positive experience mm-hmm. here at the RTC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would add to that, Dawn, that I agree completely with everything that's been said already. You know, at one point, having been a single mom with three kids who, at one point were going to three different schools, I was trying to drop them off at three different schools before school, get to my job. We have responsibilities on our plate often as mothers that, you know, men don't have. And I think that that's shifted a bit now. So there's that. But I would also add to that, taking care of yourself and healthcare and getting to your doctor's appointments. And I'm talking inside the organization now for your employees to make sure there's space for people to do the things they need to do. And, you know, in terms of, does it make a difference to have, you know, a female CEO for the community? I will say that, you know, I have a female maintenance director and I've had, you know, highway patrol inspectors come in. I want to be the first one to have a female maintenance director. I have a female maintenance manager. I have a female maintenance supervisor. I do not have a female mechanic yet. Mm. So it is one of my goals to be the first there, because I assume it would be the first. It's very uncommon, but I've had highway patrol inspectors who have been coming to this facility for years comment on the difference in the condition of the shop and the fleet in terms of cleanliness, tidiness, body work, you know, the physical appearance of the fleet, which is extremely important to our customers. And yes, the buses are still running. We're still, you know, I'm not trying to say it's all about how everything looks, but it is important from a safety perspective internally, from a pride perspective internally, and then to our customers, of course, it's extremely important that the buses are not only clean on the inside, that the fleet and the facilities that they're using to use our system are clean and well taken care of. And that was something that I felt was a big opportunity when I started here, that I just didn't think that we were doing as well as we could be. And I think we've made great improvements there.
Awesome. Charlotte, you want to chime in?
Yeah, absolutely. So we had today the men and the company actually celebrated the women for a luncheon. They surprised us. Now, how they got through and got by with this, I'm like, women, we're slipping. If the men can go in the conference room, set it up, and we not know. But, you know, I think timeliness is important, because I check a couple of boxes, Dawn. I'm female, I'm African-American, and I check the box for inclusivity, diversity and inclusion. And Birmingham needed that right now, because it's in a different shift. And this company, the culture was so bad with the employees that they felt leadership did not see them. And they felt like they were not recognized. And I think women, what we do well is and I don't have any children. I actually have been told that I have a very nurturing spirit. But I think that's women in general, because we know what we have gone through, so we don't sit in a judgment zone. You know, here is a no judgment zone. And I tell my staff that you can do, and I'm the example of what you can be, what you can do. And when I feed that into them, I saw today that they actually received something from somebody being in this role who is more sensitive to what their needs are. And not only just from a business perspective, but having opportunities to create the Max Foundation, which now feeds into families that are going through hardships and all these things that I noticed when I came through the door. Now, this stuff didn't just happen, ladies. This culture has been like this for years. So why did it take a female to come through the door to see and to be sensitive and to be understanding of these kinds of things that are so obvious in front of me, that, I mean, it was just very obvious where the company culture was, where the company attitude was. And so today, when the men actually talked about how, as leaders, we still showed a sense of sensitivity and where we were strong when we needed to be, but we were understanding when we needed to be too. And that to me showed me today that Charlotte, you know what? You are here at the right time in the right place, because what they needed right now was a female to come through this door and actually show them that you can be strong and a leader and still sensitive and nurturing.
Man, I can just, you know, I can just sit here and talk to you guys all day long, never break, never do anything, but we have to. So let's take a moment for a short break and then continue our conversation with these amazing women who are not just the future, they're right now and taking us into the future. Thanks.
Register today for APTA's 2024 Mobility Conference, April 28th through May 1st in Portland. Join your industry colleagues to address the critical priorities and challenges facing bus and paratransit systems. Participate in dozens of educational sessions, specialty workshops, bus display, products and services showcase, networking events, committee meetings, and technical tours. Plus, this year, the International Bus Rodeo is back. The public transportation industry is in a new mobility landscape, and this event will help you better operate in and adapt to the changing environment. Make your plans now to attend APTA's 2024 Mobility Conference presented by HNTB.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of The Transit Authority. Again, I'm Dawn Dissler, and I am joined by this amazing group of female CEOs from across the country for Women's History Month. So, of course, you know, we all talk back and forth with each other quite a bit. And we were, during the break, we were just talking about some of the different things. You know, I had an experience once, and we were just talking about some lyrics to a song. Okay, I won't say the song so we don't get in trouble, but it's all about how, you know, why can't I just be a woman? I mean, why do I have to work twice as hard, right? That's pretty much what it comes down to. Why do I have to give twice as much? Why, if I say something forcefully, I'm not the strong leader like a man is. I'm the, you know what. And so all those kind of things that kind of feed into the stereotype. And I always remember the guy that kind of got me into management is the greatest guy in the world. One of my closest, dearest friends. But I remember standing outside of a meeting room one time, and he was complaining about a couple of women. And he was complaining about them and the way that they were leading and what they were doing and the way they had talked to him, kind of. And I'm sitting there by him and I'm going, I didn't see that. That's not what I saw. You do know, like, I'm standing right here beside you while you're saying this. And he looks at me and he goes, well, I just don't think of you as a woman. And so on many different levels, I didn't know how to take that. And I just went, wow, well, apparently you need to start, you know, and I just kind of turned around and walked away. So when we talk about that, and we talk about the way we're supposed to be perceived, or the way we're supposed to dress, or the way we're supposed to talk, or any of those things, what's the advice that you guys would give to a woman who is coming into leadership that just wants, you know, wants that one piece of advice from you of what should I do or how should I be? Aaron, I'm going to start with you on this.
Wow, that one's a great question, Dawn. And I think that we have to really find the balance of being authentic and being who we are while also being realistic about the structure that we're working in. So I think the advice I would give, and I think back to a time when I had to actually give this advice to someone, and it wasn't someone particularly like new in their career, although it was someone new and as structured of an environment as we're working. And I said, you know, and they were dressing a certain kind of way that probably wasn't going to serve them well. And, you know, I said, you know, we're in a certain framework. Here's a couple stores I would recommend, you know, get a black skirt if you like to wear skirts, make sure it's of a certain kind of length, get a jacket, get black pants. You know, you don't have to have this big wardrobe, but you do have to look professional. And here's kind of what the expectations are. So I feel like there's a lot more room for error with women in terms of dress, because what do men wear? Like, let's talk about before, you know, and now it's a little better defined, but think about originally when you would get that email that said the meeting was business casual. It's like, what does that mean? For women, it was either business or it was casual. For men, that means, you know, maybe don't wear a tie, maybe don't wear a jacket. For women, what did that really mean? And so I think helping people understand, yes, you want to be yourself. You want to wear clothing and be who you are that reflects who you are. And at the same time, you know, we do have to work within a certain, you know, we're working in a certain environment and you want to portray a certain professionalism, right? So I would say the balance between authenticity and not being naive about the fact that even though maybe we have made progress, there still is a framework that has to be considered.
See, Dawn,
whether we like it or not, right?
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting because here we're talking about women have to think differently. You right. As a woman, and I don't think it's, again, this is not about men bashing, because I think we've all talked about how significant men have been in our career.
Right.
But there's a lot more thought about how we're supposed to look. And I know coming up, professionally, I dressed very androgynously. I thought I needed to look just kind of like the men, and I didn't wear skirts. I didn't wear dresses. And, you know, I just felt like I had to fit in to be taken seriously. And I would certainly tell a young woman coming up, Erin, you're right. You need to be yourself. You need to be proud that you are a woman and embrace all of that. I mean, there's certainly professional decorum for everybody, like men and women. You're not going to come to work in jeans unless that's, you know, it's casual day or whatever it is. But it is still, it's ironic to me, though, that as we're having this Women's Month, we're talking about here in 2024, that we still have to tell young women, you know, be yourself. However, you know, right. You're going to want to make sure you're, you know, don't look too sexy. Don't look too this, you know, insert the adjective. And because really, what does that mean? Right. Put a dress on. I've certainly had bosses that have called me sparkly. They have made comments about my appearance. You know, these are people that I report to, men. And I find it's still today. This is something that is, you know, this wasn't years ago. And so it's a real fine line. You have to create a space where people can be who they are, men and women.
Yes. Yes.
But be who you are. But I think for women, there's still, we have to think about it more deeply on different layers than men do.
And that's so true, because I think the thing that we don't often talk about is that the standards by which we are being measured were all established by and large by white men, because they were the ones who actually ran the show for so many years. And that type of standard doesn't change overnight. And so I totally appreciate Erin's perspective about, you know, you got to understand the context of the environment that you're in today. I mean, if we do things perfectly in our perfect world, you know, women who are young now and eventually come up to where we are today, that future, they won't have to think about those things, right? The standards will have changed. They will have been redefined by women having been in leadership roles and having been able to set new standards. And so, you know, our hope is that, you know, we can change that future for all young women by the time we leave the industry, right? But that's really fast, given the long, long history of things being defined by white men.
Not having to check that box. Charlotte, go ahead, because you talked about checking those boxes.
Oh, yeah. And now, you know, the world is so different today. You got a gamut of different types of people in your organization. It ranges all over the place. And, you know, I tell my team all the time, be who you are. Be authentic. That's the first thing. Yeah. And it's difficult to sometimes be authentic. And I've been in places where I could not be myself. And I wasn't comfortable. And in any job, you have to be comfortable. It has to be a fit for you as well as a fit for the company. But today you may have women who are androgynous and they're wearing suits and ties, you know, and you may have someone else who dresses a little less casual or, and what I normally do is, you know, I tell them, think about this. If you had to present that day to the board, what would you want to look like and how would you want to look? But be authentic in your look. And if you're a female who wears a tie, I support that. Because again, I have a company where we have a no judgment zone. Truly, I have to be a no judgment zone because I was judged so much in my career about what I wore, how I wore it. And I've never been a dress lady. Now, I went through an era where, you know, pre-business casual, I was in that blue suit. Remember that, MJ? That blue suit, oh, yeah. IBM yep. era when you stockings yep. on and you couldn't wear the sling back shoes. And, you know, you had to be really business dressed every day. And I didn't like that. That stifled me. But I had to do what I needed to do in that environment to expand and to grow. But now that the world has evolved, I can wear my tailored suits and be very comfortable every day and conduct business as a leader. So I extend that line a lot in terms of as long as they're professionally dressed, I tell them, you got freedom, you know, business casual, within reason, and just know that you're always the person who is presenting yourself to something or someone. And if you have a career that you want to grow in, think about how you look, because before you say a word, the first place they're going to see is you. Right. And when they see you, they're going to look at you. And it doesn't matter what they think of you, your dress is going to tell them who you are.
And I just want to add on, because I think it's certainly something I have experienced so much as a woman coming up professionally. This idea that when you get dressed in the morning, you're getting dressed to make sure that you don't. So if I wear a dress, you know, is a man going to comment on it? Because that's what I've had. I've had, MJ, you look so beautiful in that. You look so beautiful mm-hmm. in that dress today. I don't think men have to ever think about the clothes that they put on. How is it going to impact right. the men in the room? And that I find that's really, really annoying. I want you to, I'm in the room being who I am. And I want to be known and respected for all my hard work and for what I know, and the, you know, the leadership that I'm trying to, you know, create, the environment, I should say, I'm trying to create here in the organization. But we do have to have we think about it differently. I don't think men ever have to get up and think, I wonder if I wear these pants, will they think they're too tight or make them, you know, oh my God, look how great mm-hmm. it's odd. And I think for most men, they just don't, because they were born men. They have not experienced what we have, and they don't know that you sometimes have to dress down, if you will, because I may have a creepy boss. I mean, it's just these things you have to think about that are just real still today, 2024.
Let me tell you a little story, ladies. It happened about 2 years ago. It was career day, and one of my employees' son went to work for career day, and he spraying his hair to turn it white, and he was impeccably dressed. He had on this gorgeous suit, you know, and he said, I'm the CEO for the day. And so we posted that on LinkedIn, and guess what? I got a comment that said, this is a shame.
Oh, it my God.
One of the comments, everybody else, I got a lot of support on LinkedIn. But, you know, we were proud that this little boy wanted to dress like a CEO. But all that this guy could see with this little boy was dressing like a woman who's very tailored and who does not wear dresses, who's probably not the most feminine person. But all he could see was that this little boy was mimicking a woman. And he didn't like the way that this boy was dressed. So he put that on LinkedIn. I took the comment down, but I'm just giving this as an example that we still have a long way to go. All the, you know, the prejudice and discriminations about what women should look like, what they shouldn't. I'm a CEO. What does it matter if I'm wearing a suit?
Yeah.
Really?
And I'll
they gave him hope to be a CEO.
Yeah. That's why I bring up too for young people, because often, you know, the younger generation sometimes say, well, it shouldn't be that way. Well, we agree it shouldn't. And at the same time, it still is to a certain extent. So awareness of it, I think, is very important. And I agree, you know, I agree with Nadine. I think it's our job to move the needle on that and make progress on that. But it's naive, in my opinion, to think that just because you believe it shouldn't be that way, that you shouldn't, that it's not going to perhaps negatively impact you you don't take it into consideration, right?
Yeah, and I'll just add too that, and I'll confess that I am extraordinarily conflicted about giving somebody feedback on how they dress or how they behave or whatever, because I do want them to be themselves. And the last thing I ever want to do is say, you have to assimilate to a standard that someone else set, somebody who doesn't look like you set. That is super difficult as a CEO. But I also recognize that, you know, sometimes when we give that feedback to people, it can sound very draconian. And it sounds like we are, you know, unwavering in this feedback and that whoever we're talking to is going to have to assimilate no matter what. But I mean, why not reward, you know, for that little boy, Charlotte, who dressed like you, why not reward him for his creativity? I mean, what a wonderful thing, that he aspires to be a CEO, and it doesn't matter to him that you're a woman.
It didn't matter.
So to me, it's like, okay, where's that fine line between, you know, stifling the creativity and asking people to assimilate and letting people be themselves? And that line is continuously being redefined. You know, we've got to just keep working at it, because eventually it'll change, but it takes a long time.
I think we're the ones
who change. It's probably proof that we've made progress.
That's right.
Through his eyes, that's what he saw, Charlotte.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's true. Yeah.
And as usual, Charlotte has got us all worked up.
All I know is I want a picture of you with the little boy. It sounds so adorable.
I saw that picture on LinkedIn. That was a great picture.
You saw it? I got my biggest hits off of that picture.
See, he wants to, when he grows up, he wants to, maybe that's what he wants to be. What he knows. So I think
if I can inspire that, I'm happy. I've done my part.
Yeah. And I mean, much like Charlotte, I don't have children of my own. I have nieces and nephews and stuff, things like that you spoil. But, you know, to have a child even want to be, you know, emulate what you're doing in any way, that especially the good things that you're doing in any way, I mean, that just gives you a boost that feels really good. So that was a great story, Charlotte. We appreciate you taking us into that. But I'm going to start with you on this one. Okay. So the next question is, I want to know, what was that one thing that in your career that really pushed you out of your comfort zone and really, you know, made you better, because it really took you out of that comfort zone and stretched what you were trying to do? What was that one thing in your career that you can look back on and go, man, I was worried about that, or man, I thought that was going to be absolutely crazy, but it made me a better person or a better CEO?
That one's easy for me. While there are a lot of things, you all, that one's easy. And I have numerous things that I can give as an example. But I tell you, Don, it's when I became authentic, when I decided to be me as I am. When I decided to admit that I had a wife, when I decided to walk in who I was as a person and be okay with that. Because for years, you all, I couldn't do it. I was stifled most of my career. I didn't come out till I was 50 years old. Okay? Because I was so afraid to walk in myself and my authenticity. I was so afraid of what the business community would think of me. I was already experiencing some things anyway, but I didn't want to experience the raft of not being promoted and not being seen for the knowledge and the skill set that I had. And so I thought that all of that would paint a picture of who I was, and I would never get the opportunity to be an executive or a leader because of my own life. And after I decided that I no longer cared, that whoever would get me as a company would be rewarded for me to be honest and upfront. Amen. So when I came to Birmingham and took this job, I said, the one thing you'll always get from me is honesty. And that changed my whole. And since then, it's been straight uphill. And had I known that 20 years ago, hell, it wouldn't have took me so long to come out, Don. I'd have came out sooner. I mean, MJ, I was stuck.
I'm not surprised, and it's really heartbreaking, actually.
Tough career, but
yes,
you know, all the more I appreciate the experiences because I'm able now to be the example and to be the mentor and the coach and the ally for people like myself to help them move along in their field of interest. And so I say I leave legacies. I don't have kids, but I'm leaving legacy of leaders all over the city.
That's
and
right.
Within this company.
Absolutely.
And how lucky are we that you are your authentic self and that you are giving so much back to the industry.
Yeah.
We're so
absolutely.
Lucky.
Thank absolutely. You so much. Who's Thank brave you. Enough to follow that? Go ahead.
You know, I guess I think I will. I think, Cheryl, you're right. It's being who you are. When I was in the private sector, I had to negotiate some pretty big deals, big contracts, a lot of money. And sort of cut my teeth on. I was looked at as this small, petite woman. You know, I was introduced at a conference as, you know, she floats like a butterfly, but she stings like a bee. And so when I came to the public sector, it was, again, even more so, mostly men, mostly older white men. And I think when you change careers, you stretch yourself every single day because there's an expectation of why are you in this industry? You didn't come up again. You didn't, you know, what do you know? And I do think it was, you know, learning to not be afraid to be bold, even though, and to make some really hard decisions, especially when we're talking about millions of dollars. You know, I shared with all of you, and you know, in the last panel that, you know, here we are in 2024, just a couple of months ago, I had a vendor here. I invited my CFO and director of finance to join us. We were talking about a contract worth millions and millions of dollars. And this gentleman in front of my employees said, geez, MJ, you know, you're just so aggressive. And my CFO said, actually, she's not. She's really direct. We all appreciate it. We know where we stand. And after my staff walked out of the room, I said to this man, I said, hey, because I've known him for a long time. I said, so let me ask you. You called me aggressive. I said, if I were a man, would you have called me aggressive? And he said to me, well, no. And you know how it is. And so I think what's freeing is like many of the women on this panel, my management team, I have a lot of female leaders here at the RTC. And I'm hoping that as I have had to stretch myself and be who I am, that means that if I need to you know, put my business hat on and we're going to have some difficult conversations, just because I'm being forthright and I'm being direct, but as a woman that's aggressive, I'll share that with some of my female leaders and say, be who you are, don't start a sentence with, I may not know, or I'm sorry, or be who you are. You're smart, and if you need to be direct, be direct. And if you almost have to not listen to the environment when you hear, you know, men are going to call you aggressive when that they actually probably would have been called, wow, he's doing a really good job cutting a great deal. So I think it's a matter. So just to sort of summarize, Charlotte's right. It's when you finally can be comfortable with who you are, and regardless of how it's still the environment or the you know, other colleagues may judge you, you're setting such a great example for other young women.
Great.
Good for you, MJ. Yeah, I was just thinking about this because, of course, there are a billion different times when I came out of my comfort zone. But one fairly recent example that I think is important to share with everybody is, and this goes back to, you know, what is our responsibility as female leaders in this industry, and how do we use our positions of authority to change the outcomes. I had an executive, a female executive, who was being very, very mistreated by one of her consultants. And to be honest, it took me a little while to be like, hey, I actually can do something about this, because I was just sort of like, this is so odd, you know, and I was sort of relating to the fact that this happens, you know, but you know, the moment when I realized like, this is unacceptable and we have to do something about it. And I made the call to his bosses to basically say, I'm sorry, this is totally unacceptable. You need to do something about this. And if you don't do something about this, we're going to have more conversations. You know, thankfully, the boss was very understanding and immediately recognized the issue at hand. And this boss happens to be a woman as well. And so she took care of things, but it took a couple of conversations. And at one point I remember saying to her, you know, the lack of action being taken reflects on your values as an organization. The minute I said that, she was just like, it's done. We're going to take care of it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, it wasn't just this one particular consultant. It was other people from his staff who were also mistreating the same individual, the same executive leader on my team. And so, you know, to me, that was pivotal because I was like, oh, wait, I actually have, you know, sometimes you think, I don't know how I'm going to pursue this change. But then once you're in it, you start to realize like, you know what, I've experienced enough of this, you know, marginalization in my own career that I actually know how to articulate it. And it may not be smooth the first few times I do it, but the more we talk about it, the more we can actually fight against this and change that experience for women. And so, you know, having that experience where I actually took action to make something better for my team, I think was important because now I think that has been sort of the tipping point for me and one of the reasons why I join panels like this and I, you know, talk to organizations like WTS and we say things like, okay, now what can we do about it? Because it's not just saying, right. You know, we're experiencing these things and let's all share some sob stories about it. It's what are we going to do to change the game?
Erin?
Agree. Wow. Tough to follow those three comments. A couple of things. It made me reflect back on a time that one of my senior leaders came who happened to be a female and said, you know, this is what I want to do. I don't even remember what it was, but, and I said, okay, I think that's a great idea. And she said, who do we need to ask? And I'm like, no one, just do it. Right. That was when I was like, we don't need to ask anyone. We can just do it. So I think that constrained mindset, right? And thinking about and really being intentional about being the ones to kind of change that framework and that narrative and people's thinking on that. Because even when it is very subtle, it's there. And the other thing that I think is really interesting about it is that fine line with, you know, and MJ kind of brings it up in her assertive story, and it's in the lyrics we were talking about too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's one that says, I'd be a fearless leader. And I have it in front of me. That's why I'm able to recite it. I'm not that much of a Swiftie. I'm a new Swiftie. I'd be a fearless leader. I'd be an alpha type. When everyone believes you, what's that like? Right? What's that like? Because not verifying your information, that kind of thing. But I think there's a fine line between, again, it goes back to this isn't about the man bashing, nothing like that. But it's also, you know, it's not about being a victim. It's not about being a victim. It's not fair. You know, we very much have to just acknowledge, yes, that was the framework. And when we think about the progress that we know has already been made, it gives us a glimpse to what we know can happen in the future. So I think it's a great privilege and honor for us to be in roles where we can help impact that change.
That's right.
That's so right. True.
It's
so true.
Absolutely.
Well said.
You know, much like everything we've been talking about, you guys are just knocking it out of the ballpark. So I can say that if not for being women CEOs, I think I'd put you all on my baseball team so you could hit home runs all day long.
John, I just have to say that it's hilarious to hear these sports analogies because I use sports analogies, but I am not a sports fan. So my husband is constantly astonished that I use terms like downfield blocking or inside baseball.
There you go. That's it. No, I mean,
well, like, come on, you don't even know what that means.
You know, so I don't know. I'm going to keep doing this. All right. So I know we've been having great conversation, and I would like nothing more than to ask like 10 more questions, but I also know that we have to put everything in a certain amount of time. So last question, and I'm not even sure if you guys are going to have, you'll have good answers, I'm sure, but I'm not sure if you'll want to do this. So what would you change about your career path? And if you wouldn't change anything about it at all, tell me why you wouldn't do that. And I'm going to let anybody go ahead and start that wants to start.
I actually love this question.
Excellent.
Go ahead. Nadine, so first, you should start, Nadine.
Yeah. I'm raising my hand. I actually get asked this question a lot. And my answer is always the same and unequivocal. I would not change a damn thing. And the reason I say that is because if I changed any one thing along any part of my path, I would not have ended up exactly where I am right now. Mm-hmm. Now, were there some painful times during that career path? Yes. Oh my gosh. Too numerous to name, too painful to even recount sometimes. And sometimes I even still get upset about it. But the truth is that all of those pain points were learning moments that really shaped who I am today. And again, you know, if I had done anything differently, I wouldn't have ended up here. You know, I may not have ever gone to Colorado after being in Kansas City. I may not have ever made the decision to go into transit. I may not have ever even considered, you know, working in an innovation office. You know, I may not have ever developed the confidence that I needed to finally get to where I am today. So it's so important. I tell young women all the time that, you know, when you are in your career for 30 plus years and you look back on things and realize that you actually made it through all those tough times, you know, you want to tell all of them and you want to give them that peace of mind that they're going to be okay. Because we all know young women who are always struggling with like, should I make this decision or shouldn't I? What happens if it's a mistake? And you just want to say, you know what, you're going to be fine. Like, don't worry, because I've been where you were. Or where you are. And you know, I got through it and so will you. And so I always want to tell them like, you're going to be just fine.
All right. Who's going next?
I'll jump in. I think I wouldn't change. And ladies, I think you can tell by now, I probably had a pretty tough career, but I wouldn't change the experiences because like Nadine, I am the person I am today, but I would go about things differently. I wouldn't be so hard on myself. I wouldn't think if I had to talk to the younger Charlotte, I would say, don't be so hard on yourself. You don't have to be the best. You don't have to check all the boxes. You don't have to be the smartest in the room, regardless that they tell you you have to be the smartest in the room when you're female. You don't, though, because actually, when I became a CEO and saw some of these, I'm like, well, how did that person become? But I won't even go there. Okay, I won't talk about that. But I would tell myself, you are enough as you are, as a woman. Things will change. The world will evolve to catch up with you and be ready. But just, you know, take it slow. Don't be so stressed about it. Don't stretch yourself too thin. Don't think you have to join every organization, every group. You have to be friendly to everyone, those who are even not friendly to you. That's who I am, though. I'm a kind person. So I like to think that even the people who were mean to me, I was kind, but I don't have to internalize it and have them validate me, though. And that's what I did throughout some of my career, a lot of my career. I was looking for validation. So I would tell the younger Charlotte, don't look for validation from the wrong people. Mm-hmm. Validate yourself and know that you are enough as a woman as you are, and your career will go where it's supposed to go.
Wow. Both of Nadine and Charlotte, it's like the same coin, just a little different right on each side. I you know, growing up, again, as I sort of mentioned, very scrappy on my own at a young age, I used to think what was sort of my, you know, superpower, my, if I was Papa, my spinach, is that I was going to be who I was going to be, not because of my parents, but in spite of them. And I think I took that mindset through my entire career, that, you know, even allowed, you know, the challenge of going from the private sector to the public sector. But I think what it's, you know, what it's done is I look at my employees, they're humans with a lot of layers. And, and so I probably, like Nadine, I wouldn't change anything because I think all that adversity, I have a different insight as to the path that people are on, that your employees are not just work bots, that they come to the table with all different, don't judge a book by its cover because you just don't know. And so I think, and like Nadine and Charlie, I mean, tough, I had some really, really tough times, not only as a young person, just because of my family life, but just as a woman working in the sort of men's world. Because of that, this is sort of my superpower now, where I don't see people just as this one dimensional. I everybody has a story, and that diversity and richness that they bring to your organization is really makes your organization the best place to be. So
that's good.
Agree. Well said, MJ. I wouldn't change anything either. I think, you know, too many things to mention that, you know, were difficult. And at the same time, I think to go back to what we had already talked about, in terms of preparing, building resiliency, and just being open and authentic and empathetic, to your point also, MJ, I think that's what makes us the leaders that we are. And of course, you know, there's the technical background and the different skills we all bring. And this, you know, the conversation we're having is about being leaders. Right. So as leaders, yes, we all have different technical skills and backgrounds and strengths, but our leadership attributes that were developed through all of that hardship and through not just the hardship, but the successes too. Right. I think it's human nature that our minds go to the things that were hard. And, you know, one of the other things to say to the newer generation, or that, you know, I wish I could say to the younger self, is things, you know, when we get in our minds that something is such a big deal, is that something you're even going to remember 2 years from now? Mm-hmm. And some of them we will, right? I mean, some of them you can remember where you were, what was said, how you felt. And that is one of my, if not my favorite quote, in terms of leadership and just who I am, is, you know, and it's Maya Angelou, and I said this on the panel, but, you know, people don't remember what you say. They remember how you made them feel. Did you take the time to remember their name? Did you take the time to fully see them and, you know, connect with them? And I think that's what, you know, makes us great leaders. And I don't think you always recognize the value of that, and over time how that develops and continues to develop.
So yeah, cheers. All four of you, I agree with everything that you just said. Of course, I agree with everything you've said through the whole thing. But I agree with everything you just said. Don't tell my wife that. She doesn't think that I agree with anything she said.
Your secret's safe with us, Don.
I appreciate it.
Until it gets published.
Yeah. Until she listens, and you're in trouble.
I'm going to answer the last question too, though. So I'm going to say that while I agree with everything you guys said, I would change one thing. And the one thing that I would change is I would make sure that I took time for myself. And I would make sure that I took time to be with family or friends and make sure that I went to that birthday party that I missed, or that anniversary celebration that, yes, I missed, or not come in at 5 o'clock in the morning and work until sometimes midnight, you know, and go home exhausted. And, you know, I think that is the one thing. And it's the one thing, especially in my C-suite, that I stress with my folks, please, family first all the time.
Yes.
Always family first. That's right. If you need to walk out the door to do something for your family and you're thinking, should I, then you should go do it.
Yes.
So that is the one thing that I would change, because I know I gave up a lot of those moments. And Charlotte, I'm pretty sure I'm older than you. So I gave up a lot of those moments through a very long but very wonderful career. But that is the one thing that I would change. Okay. I'm going to give you guys.
I'll take that advice now, Don. I'll take that advice.
Yeah, it's great advice.
I'm going to ask everyone. We'll start texting and going, hey, have you taken that time yet? So look at that.
It's great advice.
I need that text when I'm in a board meeting.
We all need that text. Hey, this has been a lot of fun. I want to give you guys, though, like 30 seconds. It's got to be short. 30 seconds of what is the one thing you want everybody to know that you've learned from doing this panel? I want to know what you've learned or really felt from doing this panel, but it's got to be real short. Erin, you want to go?
I will go. I'll jump in. I think one of the things that stands out to me the most and what I learned, and I suppose on some level I already knew this, but just that we have the power and ability to move the needle on this framework that we're working in by the examples we set, by the decisions we make, and by the impact that we have on the people that we work with.
Excellent. Charlotte?
Just embrace the past. I am excited and I am very happy to know that I have sister CEOs and colleagues who went through the same things, kinds of things that I have gone through, because sometimes you feel alone. You know, even now, I'm sure there are women leaders out there who feel alone, but just know you're not alone. You have sisters all over the place who can resonate with your stories, who can embrace their past. And I had to go back to some painful places here, Dawn. So thank you for bringing that out, because I suppressed some of that stuff. You know what I mean? But just embracing the past and knowing that I have wonderful people like you all who have gone through the same thing and who I can call on to kind of understand the things that I'm going through when I have to go through something now. Thank you.
Nadine?
Yeah, I feel like I could just repeat what Charlotte said, because first of all, so honored to be with this panel today. And Charlotte, I think right at the outset, you talked about how you made all those cold calls to anyone, any of the CEOs, just to see if you could get some assistance. And you're right. A lot of us feel like we're alone, because it is kind of lonely in the CEO role. And, you know, I often forget, because we're always so busy, right? I often forget that I could just pick up the phone and call somebody who will understand immediately what I'm going through. I know that APTA is putting together that kind of buddy program for CEOs, which is super helpful. But I think women generally, at all levels of the organization, need to remember that there are people out there supporting them and not be afraid to ask for that help. Because as we all know, women are afraid to ask for help. Mm-hmm. So I think if there's one thing I could, you know, share with everyone and ask people to think about, you know, and be more intentional about, it's just that outreach to get the support that we need. Thanks, Don.
Yeah.
MJ, close us out.
You know, I think that what everyone said, Nadine, Charlotte, Erin, I agree with everything that you've said. It's coming on today's panel, it was, you know, what I felt being on the panel with all of you in APTA, I left with this, like I was walking on cloud nine, because I think as humans, we love to be seen and heard. And there's this camaraderie around other women executives and CEOs that you get me and I get you, because we have the insight because we've walked this path. And so it's almost comforting to know, again, not alone. It's one of those things you get in a group and you say, hey, did you know this happened to me? And then another woman says, oh, totally get it. And then so, oh yeah, it's a confirmation of the path has been hard, but the path has been wonderful and it's been worth it. And I think, again, to what Erin said, we have a chance, because there's power in numbers, we do have a chance to effectuate change. And so I think you should all come to Vegas and let's just get it. Let's do a staycation and just keep talking on this women and have fun too.
Hey, I'm for that.
Say when. Say when.
All right. Well, ladies, we're just about out of time. But before we say goodbye, I want to thank everyone out there for listening to this episode of the Transit Authority, Women Are the Future, in honor of Women's History Month. This is an official podcast of APTA. And of course, I want to say a special thank you to MJ, Erin, Charlotte, and Nadine for everything that they brought informative and insightful to this conversation. And I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of this panel and be your moderator, and thank all of you so much and our audience for joining us today.
You were amazing, Dawn. Amazing.
Thank great
you,
job, Dawn. Thank you. Thank you.
And I hate to say goodbye, ladies.
I know. So do we.